Hey friends, it's been a while since I've released a new episode of the E-commerce Maven podcast, and I'm excited to be back with you, kicking off the new season and focusing on five ways that you can survive the economic downturn that many of us are experiencing right now for your business. So let's get into it. Welcome to Brave and Boss, a podcast for the purpose-driven founder who wants to grow their e-commerce business. I'm your host, Christy Sumer. I'm the CEO and founder of The Ethical Fashion Line Encircled, a conscious business coach and passionate about helping you break through your limits and build a brand that matters. Let's do this. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the e-commerce Maven podcast. I'm your host, Christy Sumer. I am super excited to be back kicking off another season of the E-commerce Maven podcast. It has been a minute since I released a new episode, and I'm going to give everybody all the details on what's been going on behind the scenes and why that is, as well as really utilize this time with you to give you some actionable strategies that you can implement in your e-commerce business today to make the most impact. And the thing is the podcast is a lot. So for those of you listening that have your own podcast, you know that it's not just as easy as recording an episode and throwing it up there on Apple Podcasts. There's a lot of behind the scenes that happens. So, you know, this is a project, a labor of love. We have had advertisers on here before, but largely it's just something that I pay for and just kind of do for fun, because it really kicked off as a way originally because people were wanting to pick my brain. And I just thought, you know, if people are asking me all these questions all the time, I should just make it a podcast episode, because maybe other people have those questions as well. So that's kind of how the podcast originally began. And yeah, it's just been a lot, I think, to keep up with. I'm not sure the last date I released an episode. I know I did one in the fall with Marie Forleo, and I think I did one around Black Friday as well, but it's definitely been a minute. So I apologize for not being more present on this. I think it's just been hard. You know, unlike most business coaches, I'm actually an active operator of a business, seven-figure business with employees and an office space and manufacturing. So that takes priority above all in my world. And I've been trying to focus and sometimes winning, sometimes failing at working less. So that in itself has been, you know, a little bit of a challenge. And the last like 6 months, probably up until from September to January, I guess, I was dealing with yet another health issue, which nobody could find these answers about. And thankfully I'm feeling a lot better now. But again, it was just another thing to kind of deal with that was, you know, creating a lot of anxiety and honestly wasn't making it really easy to concentrate and do work and stuff like that. So again, I apologize for not being more present, especially in the time where I feel like small business owners really need each other to help each other out with tips and tricks, because it is a really difficult environment. And some of us saw that softening happening last year or the year prior. I think we have just generally seen in the e-commerce industry a decline in the last 2 years after, you know, the pandemic hit its peak. With e-commerce penetration and lots of brands opening up, it's kind of started to peter off. And I believe we're back in the stage where e-commerce penetration is almost the same as it was pre-pandemic, yet there's so many more brands out there with e-commerce stores and Etsy shop. You know, in fact, there's members on my team, like I think almost every one of them has like an Etsy shop or a side hustle. So it's very common now, which I think in one way is really empowering, because it gives so many people the opportunity to create something and bring it out into the world. But it's also very confusing for the consumer and creates a lot of market fragmentation, coupled by the fact that big brands are just like dominating in many categories. It just makes it hard to break through and run a business, especially in a time where people will default to brands that they know and they feel comfortable with. So I would say that's like the first thing I want to talk about, is like what's going on in the industry. And when I say the industry, I want to more specifically, I guess, talk about 2024 and what's happened year to date that I've noticed and some friends and founders I know in the industry are experiencing, as well as others, because I think it's important to set that groundwork, because oftentimes as founders, we can, you know, see things happening in our business, and especially if you're isolated and you don't have other founders to talk to in the space, you could think that you're the only one experiencing this. And I'm not sure if anybody listening to this has ever thought that, but I definitely have. So that's why it's really incredibly important to find community and find, you know, whether that's a formal mastermind or group coaching program or a coach, or maybe it's just some friends chatting on WhatsApp who you met on Facebook. Like, you know, I don't think it has to be, you know, a $10,000 mastermind. I think it could just be a phone call every week with somebody you connected with at a conference. And those types of relationships I do think are quite pivotal, and they're really good to maintain because, again, like business owners who are going through it, especially if they're in your own category, it's just, you know, not to say misery loves company, that's so not motivating, but it's nice to know that that you're not alone. So I would just say, if you are struggling and feeling isolated, try to find some like-minded people to connect with in your industry. And I can share some ideas later on how to do that. All right, so what's been happening year to date? I would say, like, for me, we started to see some sales softness starting in December after Black Friday. We definitely went very aggressive on deals on Black Friday, and Black Friday, a lot of brands did. A lot of brands were starting their Black Fridays last year in October. I saw a brand in September called SheerTex launch Black Friday ads, which is crazy to me because that's like a month, 2 months ahead of time. And so we saw a lot of brands going out early, a lot of brands going bigger with deals, really extending their sales, all that kind of stuff. And then in December, at least for my brand, we saw a huge drop off of purchasing. And that's pretty normal in the clothing industry. I find that like gifting and holiday doesn't really always jive. So I'm always trying to figure out like what to do in that time frame. And I would say like the year before last, we probably did the best thing, which was we did a sample sale because I think people love great values. So that's like a good thing to do. I think it's good to do an end of year sale. I think that's a great thing to do. But I also think there's value in launching a product, provided it's the right product for that timing. And we were definitely not prepared to do that. So definitely felt some softness in that month and had some problems with ads. But again, I was still kind of in the mode, like, is this me? I think the market is probably fine. I'm just maybe we don't have the right tactics. I would say in January is where I started to really feel like there was a huge shift in the industry happening, just through rumblings, through founders forums that I'm a part of and members groups and stuff like that, that, you know, there's definitely feeling like there was pretty strong sales coming out of, you know, end of year sales and Boxing Week. And then all of a sudden it kind of like dropped off. And that's kind of the period when like people get their credit card bills. And I believe in Canada, the interest rates were either raised or held during that time frame, which is not what people wanted to hear. I think they actually maybe went up. I'll have to correct that in the show notes. But anyways, and the true inflation kind of started to become very obvious to people, I would say, more in January. Because I think people were kind of spending into it a little bit in the back half of the year and then realizing, whoa, like this is, you know, a lot going on here. We saw a lot more layoffs in different industries. Tech did a huge cleaning of house, let's say, lots of job loss and stuff like that. So a lot of fear that comes up, especially around shopping and something that could be discretionary, like if you're in like accessories or jewelry or handbags or clothing or even shoes to a certain extent, where it's not like a necessary category. And especially if you're at a premium price point, definitely those brands felt the hardest hit. So yeah, it's definitely been an interesting time. And I would say the other thing that happened in Q1 of this year is that Facebook has been hallucinating. I don't know what's going on that platform, but it's been pretty crazy. And some people are doing okay on Facebook, which is, I'm happy for them because I don't know what they're doing. But in my experience, what's been happening with ads is that it was really hard to find ads that worked and scaled. So could get some good return on ad spend at low spends, but as soon as you scale, it just goes off the wire. And was having an okay time with ads in February, and then like, you know, the last week of February, something happened around Super Bowl weekend, and then it just really, something else happened in February, and then at the end of March, there were some iOS rollouts for Apple, and I definitely think that impacted privacy tracking and the ability to target properly on ads. So I was seeing huge swings where, despite the targeting setup being all new customer focused, Facebook was spending 0% on new customer ads delivery. And I was verifying that through a third-party attribution tool. So that's messed up, number one, because that was not like a small ad spend. Number two, it was misreporting results. Number three, it would be totally cool one day, like we would have like an ad going off at like, you know, 4, 5, 6 ROAS, and then the next day would be like zero. So there was just a lot of volatility, and that's hard to manage as a brand and as a small brand. So if you're seeing that volatility in that platform, you're definitely not alone, because that was crazy. And I still have some ads that, like, you know, they're doing great if you're not spending that much money, but as soon as you turn them up, they kind of go off the rails. And I've heard that experience from many, many people. And there are some rumors that it has something to do with some of the nodes, or, you know, the servers that some of the people are on versus other people. Of course, the people who are winning are like, yeah, it's just all about optimizing creative and you got to do better. Okay, great. Thanks for your advice. Like, I don't, you know, it's, I would buy that if it wasn't ads that were performing top one day and then doing something else the next day. So yeah, so I think there's been that happening. And then I think just a lot of consumers not repeat purchasing. So new customer acquisition is where, you know, Facebook really is good. And then if you have people deciding to cut discretionary spending and not buying unless there's a sale, then you're getting kind of squeezed at both ends. So that's what I've seen as like the general theme in like more of those discretionary categories, less so in those categories where it's like, you know, something somebody would need or a consumable or something like that, unless it's like a luxury type of consumable. So that's really tough to work around. And trust me, I've got enough of a money scarcity mindset to like, oh boy, my gosh, it's something I need to work on. And it's something I'm going to work on this weekend at this summit that I'm going to tomorrow. So I'll definitely give you all an update on that once I'm back from that and some of the key learnings. But I know I need to work on my mindset. You have to have a growth mindset as a business owner, and you cannot live in scarcity. But it is a hard one to break, especially as a small business owner, because you are often living in scarcity, like just wondering where that next, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 is coming from. So you really have to work on that mindset. And that's something that myself, I can definitely help people early stage with their mindsets, but, you know, new level, new devil, they say. So like when my business gets bigger and bigger, it just gets harder and harder because the decisions are more impactful and more people are affected by your decisions as well. So that said, it's been a rough 2024, at least for myself and some of my clients, as well as the industry that I've seen. So if you're not having that experience, bravo. I can't believe you're even listening to this episode at this point, but hopefully you're just a fan. maybe you can DM me and tell me some tips on what you're doing that's really working. But yeah, so lots of stuff happening there. There's also a lot of stuff I didn't have a chance to talk about like Google algorithm changes around SEO and organic reach and TikTok being banned, all this kind of stuff. There's so much going on. Honestly, can't we get a break? Like, when in the world are small business owners going to get an actual break and not have to deal with just chaos in the world? And there's been a lot of world chaos too, and instability and war and all kinds of stuff happening. It's just, it's a lot. So that said, how do you ensure that your business survives an economic downturn? And today's focus for the episode is really on 5 ways to focus on, you know, keeping your business afloat. And during these times where there's economic instability, social instability, all that kind of stuff happening, like, you really have to kind of change your perspective a little bit. So I think all of us want to grow every year. We want to grow double digits or single digits or whatever, triple digits maybe. But, you know, last year the vibe was like flat is the new up. And right now I would say that would be the vibe. And even like down a little bit is like the new up, because it is tough out there. It's really, really tough. The one thing I didn't mention about Facebook too is that the cost of customer acquisition has gone up. So the platform I use, which I'll link into the show notes, called Kendall AI, it's an attribution platform. They did some studies on people spending, and they have quite a bit of people using their platform who spend a lot. And the cost of customer acquisition, I think, was up 40% year over year, or 60%, and people are spending 40% more to get the same amount of sales. So like, that's crazy. That's crazy. So if you're doing Facebook ads and you feel like you're failing, you're not. There's something awry. Okay, so let's talk more deeply about some strategies that you can do now to make sure your business is not messed up by this situation. And I'm really hoping that what's going to happen is after the summer, we're going to see kind of like a revival. Maybe we'll get the interest rate lowered again, and that will kind of bring down some of the cost of living, because, you know, when people are paying $8.99 for blueberries, it's really hard to convince them to spend $99 on a t-shirt, even if it is the most beautiful ethically made t-shirt you've ever seen. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is cash flow. So you really have to understand the principles of cash flow. And I've done a couple of episodes on cash flow. One was with Magnetic Bookkeeping last year, and I've talked about it myself a lot. And it's a topic that not a lot of small business owners practice or deal with. And I would add on to this, like, keep your bookkeeping up to date. So that's also really important. So hiring a bookkeeper should be like a top priority, especially if you're making over, I would say, like, at least reconciling your transactions, or if you're able to teach yourself how to do it, great, in Xero or QuickBooks or whatever, because you need to know where you're standing with your profit and loss at the end of each month. You can't just like have a surprise December, we've made all this money or we lost all this money. Like, you need to know that on a month by month basis, especially if you're doing over 25 grand in revenue. Cash flow is a little bit different, because this is kind of like your forecast of what you're going to spend and when those expenses are going to hit and how much revenue you're going to bring in and when that revenue comes in. And that's like a little bit different, because there can be some nuances to that in terms of, you know, when you're doing, like, for example, when you're doing a cash flow forecast on a business where you're doing manufacturing, like, you may start making product now, maybe you pre-order it, but then you don't have to pay for it for a couple months or something like that, if you're lucky. And so you want to like make sure that you have that all set out in a spreadsheet, because you may look this month and think, wow, I have so much extra profit. That's amazing. Let me pay myself like, you know, 20 grand this month. And then like next month, the bills come in for that like fabric and all that kind of stuff you order, and you're like, oh shoot, I didn't have that much extra money. So that's where a cash flow forecast comes in. And I recommend doing like a 13-week cash flow. There's some great templates on Shopify actually for doing these. And they sound really cumbersome, but they're actually not that bad. You literally just start with your opening bank balance and then just kind of put in week by week. I like to do weekly. You could definitely do monthly if you wanted to, depending on your transaction volume. But just put in those, all those transactions, you know, like anything you're buying, any manufacturing, any postage. And if you don't know the exact numbers, that's fine. Just use an average, because you'll find that like if you look at your expenses over the last 12 months, there's like an average percentage you're spending on like Shopify fees and all this kind of stuff. And so you kind of just build out that forecast and then put in your revenue, you know, expected, or your goals, as long as they're realistic, and then kind of see where you're netting out. And that process in itself needs to be updated at least weekly or biweekly, depending on your volume of transactions you're running. So you can see, like, if I said that I was going to do like $25,000 this week and I only did five, but my expenses are like 20, like, now you're starting to get into a cash flow negative position. And, you know, there's lots of systems for managing profit. Profit First is one of them as well. I like that idea. I just don't love the idea of having like a million bank accounts. I just don't think it's very practical. And in Canada, they like oftentimes charge you for more bank accounts. So, but I do like the mentality of Profit First, because myself included, I've been sucked in by the growth at all costs at many junctures in my e-commerce brand's life. And trust me, I am paying for that now, because growth is expensive in today's environment, and nobody can afford anymore to run at an unprofitable level unless they're VC funded. So do a cash flow forecast, get that done. Super, super important. The second thing I want to talk about is inventory. So you really need to know how many months on hand you have. This is a huge mistake that I see a lot of early stage, or, you know, people who are just starting up in e-commerce, or maybe you've kind of got it going, but there's only a couple people in your business, is that nobody is keeping an eye on inventory. And it may be because I attract a lot of people who are in like the ethical space, they're producing on shore. So we get kind of like used to the ability to produce product pretty quickly, but that's not the reality of today's environment. You know, I have a manufacturer who's, you know, pre-COVID was like 3 weeks production and now is like 12. So, you know, if I want to replenish the product that they're making, I have to be like writing purchase orders 4 times earlier than I was before. So you really have to have a good handle on your product and what you're selling, how many months on hand you have. So that's like just basically really simple. There's so many complex ways to do this, but I'm going to give you the simplest way to do it because that's what I like to do. So you could use an app, you could do all these things. We use Inventory Planner, that's an option, but I think it's 100 and something a month. But I think you could just do a spreadsheet and you just put in your products either by SKU or by product category, your average velocity, so like how many units you sell on average. You could even do this by month if it's a seasonal product. And then just do a calculation and see, okay, if I'm selling 50 units a month of product A and I have 150 units in stock, that means I have 3 months on hand. But my, you know, let's say with that product, you know, it's actually growing at a rate of like 20%. So then actually you're going to need 20% more inventory on top of that. And it has a 3 month lead time. So that means you need to be placing that purchase order now for that product so that you're not out of stock. Now, I'm okay with people being out of stock for product for a little bit and being on pre-order. I think that's fine. But I can tell you that it does impact conversion rate for sure. I've seen somewhere in the neighborhood of a 50% drop off when on pre-order. And then if your pre-order timeline is too long, people are not going to wait in today's environment. So I have an unfortunate situation right now in my own business where we have a really top selling product and we cannot keep it in stock in black. And I literally can't afford, because of our cash flow, to knit so much fabric right now just for this pant. But like, we're stocking out constantly. And last time we were on pre-order for 4 weeks and we were on pre-order again for 4 weeks. Now we're sold out of the pre-order, which sounds like a great problem to have if you have cash coming in from the other variant selling. So it kind of puts you in a bit of a pickle. So really know what your months on hand are. Further to that, what inventory do you have that is not moving? So after you've done that exercise, are there some products where you have like 12 months on hand? Because if you think about it, ideally you want to turn your inventory at least a minimum, I think, of 3 to 4 times a year. So if you have something that's 12 months on hand, that's a product you need to look at potentially marking down or clearing out. And it's very easy to get lazy when you have your own warehouse and rest on your laurels. But at the end of the day, I can't remember who said it. It was on a podcast recently, but they called your inventory your savings account. So if you think of your inventory as money in the bank, it's in the bank and it's been spent, it's in there. And every day it's sitting there, it is losing money, especially if you're at a 3PL, especially if you're at a 3PL that charges you warehousing fees. So, you know, you have to be really mindful of what you're keeping in stock. And I'm really bad at this because I don't like to put stuff on sale all the time. But I've started to come around to the fact that, like, you know, our previous warehouse charged us like, you know, storage fees. And, you know, they're really high. If that product's been sitting there for 12 months, and you only have like 5 of them left, like, why are you paying storage fees on this product? It's so stupid. It doesn't make sense. So keep an eye on those products that aren't moving and don't be afraid to discontinue them, unsunset them, or put them on promo to just to get them out. That's super smart thing to do nowadays. All right. Next up is the very obvious: how to survive an economic downturn, generate some revenue. So that may seem like, duh, obviously, Christy, I'm going to generate some revenue. But the question is, how are you going to generate that revenue? And this really depends on, you know, what's going on in your business and what you are seeing as selling products that are actually moving out of your inventory and that people are wanting and reviewing. It's also going to depend on your position of, you know, whether or not you are acquiring new customers or not. So the question always becomes like, how do I know that? So how you know that is you go into Shopify and there's a report, first time versus repeat customers. And you look at that report, you do it for the last 12 months and you compare it to the previous 12 months. Are you growing the net new number of customers or is it shrinking? And one of the reasons you should be concerned if that number is shrinking is because how new customers work is that ideally that's not their first and only order with you, that they're going to come back and be repeat customers. So that's going to help them grow. And then your repeat customers ideally are going to repeat and buy again, but you're also going to lose some of those repeat customers and you're going to lose some of those new customers. So you need to be continuously filling this bucket. And if you think of this bucket with all these holes in it, where, you know, some new customers are leaking out, some repeat customers are leaking out, some repeat customers are buying a lot, some new customers are coming in, but maybe not a lot. You can see that the bucket could start to empty out too much, and then that limits your revenue opportunities. So I like to forecast out actually repeat and new customers. I think that's like kind of an interesting exercise to look at and just map it out based on your marketing plan. But depending on that, like, again, that depends on what products and what you're doing to get new customers. So what brings in new customers for you? You know, for a lot of brands, it's not really launching new products unless it's a new product that is like something trend forward. But for many customers launching, or many clients, you know, launching a new product will bring back repeat customers. And oftentimes you don't have to do like a new product. You could just do a new color or maybe a new pattern or a new scent or, you know, a new flavor. Like, it doesn't have to be a whole brand new concept. It could just be like what I would call in consumer packaged goods, a line extension. And that's a really great way to avoid product development costs and bring something new into the market. And don't be afraid to like think small here a little bit, like think small batch. I think now is the time to like be small with your thinking around that. So you can always, you know, I don't love pre-orders as I just talked about, but like you can always replenish if a product sells out. So it's better than making 1,000 pieces and sitting on them for the next like 3 years. Just make like 100 pieces and see what the uptake is with your customers. So, and then you have to look at like, how are you going to get new customer revenue? Like, what are some of the strategies and tactics you can use to get them? Are you going to do ads, Google ads? Are you going to be on organic? Which channels? And really taking a much more analytic approach to this, which I know is also a struggle in this space, especially for early stage e-commerce founders, because you're doing all the things. You just want to like put out a post on Instagram and just like send it off into the world. But we really want to start looking at those analytics and seeing what's actually moving the needle. So is, you know, Pinterest post actually working, or are you just wasting your time there? Is it better for you to spend more time on doing more emails versus posting on Instagram? And sometimes the information will surprise you. So I highly recommend digging into your Google Analytics or your Shopify Analytics and starting to see, you know, where are you getting new customer acquisition from and how are you generating that revenue? So the next one is cutting costs. So there's definitely something to this. And, you know, anytime, obviously, you want to save money or be more profitable, you need to look at your costs. And now's the time not to run a bloated business. So if there are freelancers or agencies or, unfortunately, employees that you need to let go of, this might be the time to do it, even if it's a temporary layoff or something like that. Because if you're starting to see sales declines that are like maybe 5%, it might be okay. But if you're starting to see like 20, 30, 40, 50% sales declines year over year, that's huge from a profit standpoint. So you can't operate a business, let's say you were doing $150,000 a year and now you're doing $75,000, you cannot operate on the same structure. There's just, the profitability is not going to be there. So one framework that I really like that I got from Common Thread Collective, which is an agency, and they have like a Facebook ad kind of training program, and their founder talks about this four-quarter accounting, which is thinking like in quarters with your P&L. Now, this might be too much, but slow down, take notes if you have to. So when I talk about P&L, I mean profit and loss. We talked about that a little bit at the beginning with bookkeeping. But we want to think about like your cost of goods sold, your product, as around 25% of your sales. Now, that sounds crazy, I know, and that might not be achievable, especially if you're in an ethical or sustainable supply chain, but just keep that in mind. And then you'll have, you know, a further 25% going to marketing or advertising, customer acquisition. And then you have 25% going to operating expenses and then 25% to profit. So that's kind of how it breaks down. So if you ran those numbers on your business today, where would you fall in those numbers? And I think that's a really valuable exercise to do, because when I did that exercise, you know, there were some buckets where I was like, whoa, we're like way off here. you know, OPEX was really high. Our cost of our advertising was actually fairly on base for the most part, but the cost of goods sold was really high. So if you're off in like one bucket, it might be okay. But if you're off in like two buckets, then inevitably that profit bucket is going to be like totally squeezed. So that is, first of all, get an understanding of where you're kind of off. And it's, you're never going to be perfect, lead 25, 20, 25, whatever, but get a sense of where you are just so you can understand where you need to address. So let's say you're off in your cost of goods sold. So could you try to negotiate with a supplier? Could you try and switch materials? Could you move your production to a different factory? Could you change something about your packaging or design? Like, can you negotiate your freight rates? Could you switch 3PLs? Could you, there's so many things you can do there to play around with that. Could you talk to Shopify and see if they'll bring your credit card rates down? Like all that stuff. So there's lots to do to impact that. And your advertising obviously is much more controllable. So if you're spending less than 25% on ads, great. But also that might be hampering your growth as well. And OPEX is like all your salaries and rent and all that other stuff, like office stuff, et cetera. And that one probably is smaller for most of you listening to this, but you have to keep an eye on it because every person you add to that team adds to that number and it can get big real quick. Like in 2021, I had 25 employees. I now have 5. So it's something that can just explode. So know your numbers. This is like the main takeaway of surviving an economic downturn. So if you don't know where you can cut money, that is like the first step, understanding that. And that would be my recommendation there. All right, last but not least, number 5, increase prices. Now stay with me on this one because I know we're in an economic downturn. Blueberries are $8.99. Everything's more expensive. But have you noticed everybody's prices are going up and not everybody's deciding not to do that thing or whatever. So there may be an opportunity to increase your price. And I see this often with really small brands, especially when I work with people in the clothing space, because I know that space so well. Like, you cannot exist in the clothing space with 50% gross margins. You just cannot. You're never going to be able to pay yourself unless you have some huge organic boon of content, which I highly doubt because it is a very competitive category. So you need to be targeting, yeah, to be at like a 70 to 75% gross margin, which means to get there, you might have to bring your prices up. And oftentimes, again, I talked about this at the beginning of the episode, I have a lot of money mindset issues. So, and I project that a lot on my business. And it's partially because I'm not really my core customer. I think my core customer is a lot less price sensitive than I am, ironically. But, you know, I think it's like we like to think we are our customers. So then we like, you know, we think like, oh, I don't like getting too many emails, so I'm not going to send too many emails, or I don't want to pay more for this, so I won't price it like that. But we really need to look at the market and your positioning to determine your pricing. So if you're making, you know, button-up shirts in Canada and you're charging like $99, I can guarantee you that is way too low. Way too low. Even Banana Republic, you know, is probably charging like in the 150 for something like that. So you will never be able to compete with that because your supply chain costs are like 25 to 30 times higher than them. So you really need to think about like where your position is a brand. Are you a premium brand? Are you an accessible luxury brand? Are you a low volume price player? And then match your supply chain and your prices to that. You cannot be, and I'm going to say this for everybody there listening who has an ethical brand, you cannot be ethical, sustainable, and affordable. That is not an option. I don't care who talked about doing that like 10 years ago, like Everlane or some BS. It is not an option anymore. If you look at those brands, they've all raised their prices because that is a money-losing proposition. You cannot genuinely be sustainable, ethical, and cheap because D2C is expensive. I talked about the cost of customer acquisition. I talked about the declining organic reach, all those things. This is expensive. So if you're not getting those good margins, you may want to think about bringing up your costs and or your prices. And if you think about that and that scares you and you think, oh my God, I'm going to have a drop off of sales. You know, I looked at a product the other day where we increased the price pretty significantly. And I actually told people, I'm pretty sure it dropped off after we increased the price. No, it didn't. I was wrong. We didn't even sell less units. We did sell a little bit more on discount, I would say, after we increased the price, but it was not that different. So chances are your customers may not even notice. They're not even probably sitting on your website saying, oh, that's 128. Now it's 138. Oh my God. Like, I don't think people are doing that. And I don't even, you know, when I shop at brands where I'm like a pretty loyal customer, I don't even know what the prices are. Unless I was like, unless it's like a drastic shift, like it went from like $100 to $300, most people don't notice. So really consider raising your prices or at least launching new products with a higher price point, because you're not doing anybody a service in your market either by being this like low priced player who's like torturing yourself because you're not paying yourself in the background or hiring anybody, which is often what I see in the sustainable and ethical space, is a lot of people become martyrs, and that is not helping anybody in the industry. So price your product properly, all right? Okay, so I've talked long enough for first episode. I'm almost at 40 minutes here. Wow. So I'm going to wrap it up now and just go over a bit of a summary of the five things we talked about and five ways to survive an economic downturn. So we talked about doing your cash flow forecast. 13 weeks is recommended. Looking at your inventory velocity and sell through, figuring out how to generate revenue and what's really driving lift in your business. Cutting costs, absolutely. And then last but not least, increasing your prices. So if you love this episode and you found some value, please screenshot it and share it on social and tag me at Christy Sumer. I'd love to hear your takeaways. So if there's something that really resonated out of this episode, please share it and tag me. And as always, if you can rate and review the podcast, it really helps me reach more people like you, which is my ultimate goal with this podcast, is to help more entrepreneurs in the e-commerce space become successful and hit that seven-figure mark. So we'll talk soon. I'll be back soon with the next episode. All right. Take care. Bye. Thank you for listening to Brave and Boss, the podcast. If you want to take your e-commerce brand to the next level, be sure to check out my website at christysumer.com, where you can find all the show notes, free resources, and blog posts and printables to help you grow your online store. You can also follow me at KristiSoomer on Instagram. Find your purpose, make it happen. I'll talk to you soon.